best thing in 3, 2, 1.
Fall is my least favorite season.
I knew that would piss you off immediately.
I don't get it.
It does.
I don't get it, but this past weekend I went hiking in Taylor's Falls with some friends for a couple hours. Beautiful sort of tail end of fall colors, great weather, beautiful scenery, and I was like, all right, fall, you win this one. So fall was the best thing of the last couple weeks for me.
It's a good one, Alex. Mm-hmm. You came around. Mm-hmm. So this last week I was in New York, and amongst a lot of crazy things that one sees while in New York, I saw a friend that I haven't seen for 8 years. Which, when I think about it, is like a third of my life ago, you know? So it's a long time not to see someone, and a lot changes in those 8 years. But I got to see him, and we went up on his roof, and he lives on the Lower East Side, so you could see all of the buildings at night. And it was so incredibly beautiful and a different take on the New York that I've seen as a tourist. So that was the best thing.
My best thing is I went running, and I was running across the St. Anthony Main area. And this family was walking their baby puppy and their pig.
Ooh. No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah, the best. It was totally the best. I started freaking out on my run and kept running and, like, kept looking back. I made everybody on the bridge look at that pig.
Can you tell me how little the pig was?
It was not a teacup pig.
Okay.
I don't like those. Oh, I think, man. No, the way that they are, you can, teacup pigs are very, they're so cute, but, like, they're not real.
Yeah.
Like, they have to be manufactured. They're like a science project.
Do you feel the same way about, like, miniature ponies?
Nope, because Shetland ponies are not manufactured.
Isn't there, like, a mini pony?
Because I used to have one.
No, yeah. But there's, like, a mini
the condo pony? The condo pony?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's real, man.
There's, like, a tinier pony. No, there is.
It's called Photoshop.
We'll settle this later. We will settle this later. Let's get down to the meat of the discussion today. And what is the meat, Tess?
It's an empire state of mind. I think all the Midwesterners are having this itching, at least millennials, to get out there.
To New York?
To New York.
Oh.
I agree, but I don't.
Seems like there's some tension. We'll have to talk about this. We talked on a recent episode about the idea of people who are happy with themselves. And I think we all know some people who date themselves, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I'd like to talk about that.
I'm excited. This will be good.
I'm Shelby Thomason.
I'm Tess Weinberg.
And I'm Alex Goderud. That sounds like a steaming pile of meat to discuss, so let's pack it up into a nice little sandwich and pop till we drop. On a recent episode, we were having a little discussion about gender roles, what the changing face of gender in society is, all of that good business, and we ended on a note about people who, for lack of a better term, date themselves and do not feel the need to be in a relationship. We sort of teased that this would be a good topic for future discussion, and I'm totally in that camp as the, like, resident perennially single. And is single and loving it really a cliched phrase?
No.
I'm gonna use it.
Sing it, sister.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just the way my life has panned out, and it is awesome. And I mean, both of you guys are in relationships, right?
I'm not in a relationship.
Tess is not.
Uh-uh.
I am.
Shelby is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really, like, for some people, I know many, many people who I don't want to say need to be in a relationship, because that is kind of a put down in some way. But I know people who always are in a relationship.
I know a lot of people who need to be in a relationship.
Yeah, serial monogamists, yeah. Whatever you yep. want to call it. And it just has never, it's never appealed to me. And it's just great.
I got a text message from a friend who just recently had a breakup, and he texted me and said, you're the single and alone expert. Is it okay?
Oh.
And he's like, how? Ooh. And I think he meant it as a good thing. I was kind of flattered because I was like, yeah, I know how to be self-sufficient. Like, he's like, how do you go about going to a movie alone and how do you go about going to dinner alone? Because those are both two things that I do a lot. Like, I take myself out on dates with myself.
Yeah.
And I was super flattered by it because it made me feel, you know, proud that I've mastered this thing. And, you know, I think people get to a point of being comfortable with themselves and you're no longer lonely, you're just alone. And there's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that because I didn't start dating my current boyfriend until about like 2 years ago when I was just almost 21. And up to that point, I'd never dated anyone. I had never wanted to date anybody. I enjoyed being alone. And I had a kind of a similar incident with that where, like, whenever any one of my friends broke up with anybody, and I was in college at the time, so of course people had breakups like every month, maybe every couple of weeks. And I would almost always be like, if not the first person, at least one of the first people that they would go to and be like, oh my God, girls night out. Oh my God, singles night. Oh my God, like, let's be single. Let's drink wine on the porch because singleness is awesome and great. And that always made me feel really good. Like, it was awesome. And I remember being really almost like proud to not date somebody because I didn't feel like I had to date somebody.
Yeah.
And now when people tell me that they are single, like when it comes up, like relationships or something, my first go-to is that I assume that they have a really rich life, that like they have a great job, or they have a great hobby, or they have a thing that they really, really enjoy, and like it just, they just don't have time for a relationship and they're cool with it, because like I live or have lived in a world where that's the case. And honestly, like, if I hadn't been dating my current boyfriend for so long, we probably wouldn't be dating, because there's no way I would be able to have the time to dedicate to like growing a relationship.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
The dating end of things. So you're saying now that you're in sort of like the familiar stage of it, it's easier to maintain than like, what do you like to do?
Right, yeah.
Should we go to a movie or get a coffee? You know, the sort of like time intensive
stages. He knows, and I know. I mean, we both have really busy lives, and we both know that like there is too much going on that I just can't come over at any point, and like we can just hang out for days. Like, it just, that's just not realistic. But I think when you first start to date somebody, I don't know, it takes a lot of energy. I remember like the first few weeks of a relationship or few months, whatever, it takes a lot of energy. Like, that's hard and annoying.
And
yeah.
You're learning how to like compromise again.
Yeah.
Which that's something that's really hard for me. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's like, yeah, I'll sleep over at your house and sleep in your uncomfortable bed in a place I'm not familiar with.
And then wake
up to give
up
on my
stuff.
Sleep and then wake up with, it's like I have to give up these things that I'm used to making my life comfortable. And unless you really want that, unless you really want a relationship and that person in the relationship, it's, for me, the idea of compromise is just beyond me at this point in my life.
Well,
you have to do things that you on some level don't want to do because you're not doing them already. It's not
right.
It's
or because
not as though
the person is so good. Like, you want to give up on these other things because that person is like, you want to spend so much time with that person. And the idea of wanting to spend like that much time with someone, like, I can't imagine at this point in my life. I don't know.
Maybe it is like a younger. See, whenever people mention this, it feels, at least when you read it in, you know, some sort of think piece situation, you know, you read some article, because I don't think this is really a topic that people really discuss so much among their friend group, other than like, we're single. When you read about this sort of thing, the whole point of being in a relationship is changing yourself just a little bit enough to impress someone else. And that takes a lot of work. And I don't like doing that, so I'm not going to.
That's fair.
And people always say it's selfish, but it's totally not selfish. It's just doing what you want to do, which I suppose by definition is selfish. But I don't think anyone at the age of 24 or 25 or 19 or whatever should be expected to like oh, I'm going to give up this part of me just so I can be in a relationship for the purpose of, you know, Instagram photos or whatever.
Or like
Facebook
a warm
relationships.
Cuddle partner in the winter. I seem to date people come winter every year because I get really cold and I want someone warm to sleep next to.
Well,
get a dog.
Oh, God.
The dog is more.
Yeah, actually, yes, dogs. Oh, man. Oh. Anyway, going back to the article thing, I feel like whenever I read articles about like being single, like millennials and singledom or something like that, like they always have this air of coolness about them. Like the single person that shows up to the party is always the cool person. Like it's kind of like this idea that as soon as you get married, you're the uncool friend. That kind of, when you're younger, that kind of transfers into relationships, I think, sometimes. I mean, there's always that, like, cool couple that shows up. Like, there's the cool couple, and then there's the cool single person. And it's not like you don't become uncool when you're in a relationship, because my boyfriend is going to listen to this and think that, like, you know. But, and I don't think that, like, he's great. But that's kind of how I, like, the cool people I know are single.
Yeah, but you're, you know, your social desires shift when you're in a relationship. Like whenever I happen to pair up with someone for X amount of time, like I will just be with them, or I don't know, it like takes a long time to integrate them into your group of friends or meet your family. And if you don't really know if they're going to be sticking around, then why do you really do that? And so then it's kind of, you isolate yourself a little bit and then you don't partake in anything social.
So maybe in that respect,
like you become uncool because you're not on the scene or you're not out and about.
You see certain friends less, and some people, you know, some people just go off into relationship land. I've had many friends who, like, if they're dating someone, you don't, they're not your friend until they're single
again.
I always have those friends that like hit me up after a few months or after a year and then I'm like, oh, hey, you want to hang out? Bring your significant other. And they're like, oh, yeah, it didn't work out. I'm like, oh, that's why you're talking to me. But it's, you know, not in a bad way, but that's just how
it works sometimes. I think that that's another reason that people have a hard time coupling up, because that has become such a stereotype now.
Yeah.
Like, it has become such a thing that when you start dating somebody, you're not anybody's friend anymore. And I know that when I started dating, I freaked out about it. And, like, not, you know, all the time or anything, but, like, it was very, like, I was very intentional about spending time with everyone I knew, including the person I was dating.
So you were not having anxiety about the person, about your boyfriend. You were having anxiety about how your friends would perceive the fact that you weren't spending time with
them. Well, I mean, I didn't want to be that person.
Yeah,
I did not want to ruin my friendships over this guy, even though he's who I want to date. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it just, there's a balance, and it's really hard, especially when you're so young and you're, I mean, you know, you get all the love hormones and it's like, oh man, only person I want to see is that guy.
Yeah.
But
like,
I mean,
you're as fun as my friends and I get to kiss you. This is the best thing ever, you know? It's like, where has this been?
Yeah, totally. But I mean, you know, it just, I don't know.
See, I have the opposite thing where I have really, really great friendships. You know, I have a really close core of friends that I feel like I don't need to date anyone, because I get everything I need out of my friends, you know, the companionship and the great times and the, like, meaningful interactions. That's the way I've always taken a look at it.
I just prefer to be alone most of the time. Like, I prefer to go to movies alone. Like, I guess going to dinner with someone is nice, but I actually really like doing that alone, too.
Are we talking, like, McDonald's dinner alone?
Yeah, in the car, in the drive-thru. Yeah. No. No, so my friend who asked me, he was like, okay, so Restaurant Week was coming up. Restaurant Week was last week or 2 weeks ago. And I'd really like to check out some of the restaurants. Like, what do you think the singlehood etiquette is to do that? So for me, I always sit at the bar. Usually these restaurants have like 10 seats at the bar, so I don't take up a two-top, because that means the restaurant's losing money if you're alone and they could have two people there. So I always sit at the bar. I usually sit at the end of the bar so that you're not in the middle and then someone has to do the awkward seat between people, so you're not taking up more space. And then I think the key is ordering an after-dinner cocktail as well, so then you still get like the time to sit there. I usually bring a book. Some places are hard, though, because they dim the lights really early and then you can't read the book, which really bothers me. And I sound like a crazy old person, but it's true. It happens. So, I mean, there's like really pleasant ways to go about being single. And at this point, like, unless someone who just like knocks me on my ass comes along, like there's, at this point, I'm like, there's no way I would ever compromise the joys of being single to have like a snuggle bud, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting that you have a whole plan set up.
Well,
like,
it's,
I mean, you've thought through it.
Yeah, I've, well, because I've had, it's, it can be awkward if you do it wrong, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you sit at a four-top by yourself,
sure,
you're doing
no,
it wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No, that's all fair. I just, so, my plan is more of just, I don't think more than, like, 2 days in advance about what I want to do, and then I just do whatever the hell I want, whether that's...
company or not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's certainly, like, I love hanging out with my friends, I love seeing my family, I love going out and experiencing life and whatever, mm-hmm. but it's always... super, I want to say unintentional, but it is totally intentional. I'm just doing what I want to do. So mm-hmm. if I want to stay in and read, there's no one who can judge me for staying in and reading.
But it takes a comfortable person to like be okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, it takes you being very comfortable with yourself and where you're at to not have those social anxieties or the should days, the should moments. I should be doing this, mm-hmm. or this is how this should
exactly.
be.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Should is the worst
should
word.
Should is the worst.
No one should do anything.
I was listening to this other podcast. Sorry, I listened to a lot other podcasts besides this one.
You're just so literate.
I know. And there was this woman who was 85, and she was talking about, she was getting interviewed about, you know, what she does with her days. And she was very wealthy, so she didn't have, she never had to work her whole life, and, the interviewer was like, so, you know, what do you do with your days? What do you do for fun? What are your days like? And she's like, well, she volunteered a lot, but then on days she wasn't volunteering, she said that she had should-less days where she didn't have to do anything. She didn't do anything that she felt she should be doing. Mm. So if it was, oh, I should get up and go for a walk, and she didn't actually feel like it, she didn't have to do it.
Mm.
Or I should have lunch now if you're not hungry. Whatever it was, she didn't have to do anything like that. And I've never had one of those days in my entire life, like social or not, you know?
Mm.
Thought that was the best thing ever.
They're great. I don't want to say I approach should-less, because there's always like, you should go to the gym, you should not eat like garbage, you know? But it's very liberating to get 80% of the way there.
Yeah.
And I think that's about where I'm at now, is 80% free of should.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. And most of that has to do with just, you know, being comfortable being single. It's hard, you know, it is hard for some people. I wonder if it has to do with, and I hate this phrase, but hookup culture, you know, relationships
thinking.
Are not as important
well,
as...
Well, with Tinder now, I mean, we've talked about Tinder mm-hmm. on the show before, and it just gives so many options. Like, young people are exposed to so many more options than they were before. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just a fickle nature of, well... if I just, you know, wait until tomorrow, maybe someone I'd actually want to see would come up on Tinder, you know?
I think it's a really common thing within our generation because, honestly, like, as I grew up, and I know that this is kind of a certain subset of girls or women, but as I grew up, I was consistently told that, like, I don't need to be in a relationship. I don't need a man.
Mm.
Men are going to hold me back. Like, that's probably one of the reasons I never dated until I was, like, 21. Like, mm-hmm. I thought it would just be terrible for my life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's not, but I can, there are, I've seen relationships where it is, and, you know, both parties give up their grander goals, and I think that this generation, more than any other, has been told that your goals are the most important thing.
Yeah, there are 1,000 more interesting things I could be doing on any given day, I feel, than being in a relationship, whatever that entails, you know, whether that's deciding where to go to dinner or, you know, one of us is listening to music that the other doesn't want to listen to. You know, those sort of little decisions are just beyond me.
The casual or fleeting nature of dating these days, or dating yourself, becoming more and more acceptable, as Alex and I have expressed, mm-hmm. is, you know, comfortable and it's okay. It kind of makes me like nervous for the future. And I hadn't really thought about it until recently, when someone very, very close to me, who I trust very, very much, said something like, yeah, but you got to stop being so picky because, you know, then you'll be, all the good ones will be taken. You'll be alone when you're 50 or something like in the nature of that.
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, I want to be alone right now, but I probably don't want to be alone forever. You know,
I totally
like, and it had
don't
this
think
fear.
That's true. Like,
well, it
I
might not
people,
be, but.
Right. No, but I totally get it because, like, people used to say that to me all the time, too, when I was single. Like, God, you're so picky. And I was like, no, I just don't like anyone,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. And, like, I think that It doesn't make me worried about the future that, like, most people I know are single and, like, cool with being single. Just because, like, what you talk about when you say, like, I'm just comfortable with myself. I would rather be in a relationship with just me. Like, the only time you should ever then be in a relationship is when you feel like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, your relationship is only ever good if you're comfy by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Comfy by yourself. I like that.
It's like wearing pajamas, but you know, life. In a relationship. Yeah, in life in general. You should always be wearing pajamas.
So last week I was in New York for the whole week. I actually got back yesterday. And people are asking me why I was going. It was vacation. I took work off to go. And I don't really know why I went. I have a gaggle of friends out there that I wanted to see, which was really lovely. It happened to be the CMJ, which is the College Music and Journalism Festival going on. So that was nice, too. But I think it was, you know, testing the waters to see if that life, that place, New York, is some place I could imagine myself living. And I've been there on vacation a few times, but this time I consciously made the choice to stay alone, stay by myself in an apartment, live in an area that I could see myself living in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
What'd you think?
I love the city. I do. It's a really nice place to be. And, you know, I enjoy playing music and I have other interests that there's really great industries there for those things. So in my mind, I've always pictured myself being out there pursuing those things in New York because a lot of great industry is based there. And now after, you know, going to a lot of shows and talking to friends who work in the music industry and seeing what people do firsthand, it seems unnecessarily difficult. And I think that people in Minneapolis, life is so good here.
Minneapolis
is crazy.
Everything that New York City is, except easier
and better,
calmer, better, so much better. I hate New York. I hate New York City.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I want to move there, and I don't ever want to tell anybody that, because I hate it, because it's gross.
But how can you hate it and want to move there?
I don't know.
See,
there's a draw there, and it's the same reason that to New York City. It's just that's where everything is. That's where the hub of the world essentially is.
It is a hub, and that's the other thing. It's like I go to New York, I can see 10 friends and, you know, kill 10 birds with one stone essentially, and it's like it's such a hub of everything. It's a hub of relationships and connecting flights and of music and of art and radio, you know, it's all of these really wonderful things that I imagine my life being, but then even just being there for a week and like essentially partying and having fun for a week, like I just see what my friends have to do in the day to day to just get by.
To
and I don't want to move
yeah.
somewhere just to get by.
Yeah.
I want to go somewhere to thrive and to raise to the top of that.
I think that the other reason that New York is such a draw is because you do have to work so hard just to get by.
Yeah,
so if you are successful, it's incredible. Like, I imagine it's kind of just like a high consistently. Mm-hmm. You're alive, and that's amazing.
I was talking to my friend, and he just got a 33% raise, right? So that's huge in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
And, like, he started at an ad agency with a really great job to begin with. So it's like, arguably, he's very successful. In Minneapolis, he would be extremely successful, like on one of the top ends of the thing. He has to live in Hoboken, which is New Jersey, which is because you still can't really afford rent in the city. And he's not moving to Brooklyn. I would live in Brooklyn. He would never live in Brooklyn. And it's like you're still just getting by. Unless you're making six figures at least, you're still just getting by.
Right.
And unless your job is your outlet, unless your job is what you do in life, you're just going to be doing that.
Right. Well, I think
it just seems like such, and to that point, it's if you're a driven person, like you were saying, Shelby, everyone is very driven in New York, except for the people who were born there and are kind of stuck there and will never be able to get ahead. Let's talk about that, New York. To be a young, alive, creative person in New York, you have to be really driven. And I imagine that if you take satisfaction in like these sort of spiritual successes that maybe don't pay as well, it would be kind of a high, but mm-hmm. you're stuck in this edifice of money and like global power and terrible systems that destroy people. And,
and that's the other reason I hate New York.
I was in New York in May for work. I was alone. It was the first time I'd been alone in New York, and for the first 24 hours, and actually my arrival in New York was very aggravating yet romantic. It was like the storybook New York arrival. I got off the plane. I had to carry a bunch of stuff with me for work, going through the subway for like an hour and a half, taking some transfers, getting turned around. And, you know, I have a really good sense of direction, and the subway's just destroyed me. And so I was just pouring sweat, carrying all this weight with me. And I walked up the stairs, and the subway stop from my hotel was right across the street from Central Park. And it was a beautiful, gorgeous, sunny day. And I emerged blinking into the sunlight, and there was Central Park, and I was like, whoa, this is what people come to New York for. Yeah. And then within about 18 hours, I had decided I was over it. It was just, I then spent the next day in Midtown Manhattan, in Times Square for work. And
yeah,
I just
that'll
was,
kill
you know.
Everything.
Well, yeah, and like I think that New York, you know, maybe 20 years ago or something was what I wish that it was now, because every time I go there, I mean, any movie that I watch that, you know, makes me want to move to New York is like Rent-esque or something. And so, you know, it's the people, it's the grunginess, it's that, like, everything there, it's like hard, but it's worthwhile, and it's artistic, and it's all these things. And that's not really what New York City is anymore. Like, you, again, you have to make over six figures to live there comfortably at all.
Yeah, the thing is that people do it. Like, people do life there. It's just unless, I think at least from, like, a creative side, unless you're doing that, like, truly pursuing that, and, like, maybe have come, like, go to New York with some success already, like, going there to, this sounds so cynical, but, like, going there to do music blatantly and, like, trying to make it, like, it's just, it's a bigger pool with more talent, with more things to get distracted, and it's five times the price for rent, and beer is way more, you know, it's just everything, it's like, why? And for me, so I've always wanted to move there, and I've scoped it out a few times, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I'm so happy in Minneapolis, like, why would I put myself through that, you know, to struggle, to intentionally struggle, but then it's almost this rite of passage, I think that people have this
perspective. I think that that's why people do it, that's why you do it, you move there to struggle.
And I don't know if that's dumb or if it's smart. I can't decide if it is so stupid or if it's like the smartest thing you can do.
But for some people, that's really important. And that is really what some people need in order to create and, you know, have the rich internal life that they need. For some people, like, you know, New York is what some people need
in
order to.
Well, it's a kick in the ass.
Yeah, yeah. I think the outcomes, I mean, New York is the most heavily mediated city in all of human history, from books and movies and music and pop culture and cultural import and all of that. New York far surpasses even LA. You know, LA is kind of a byproduct of the fact that famous people
live there. I would say even like
there.
London.
Yeah,
it's more documented
New York,
than London or Paris.
New York is
maybe
such
not Paris.
A okay, that's
Paris might beat it. But
right. But New York is at least in our glitzy modern era, New York is the total summit of everything artistic people aspire to. And for some people who move there seeking that, it is totally real. Like, New York offers the inspiration and the pace and the kind of, you know, the grittiness
it's
yet
everything
funness.
That millennials want, which is you're making it on your own, because we're all about, like, independence, right? And it's artistic, and it's cultural, and it's unique, and all these things. But, I mean, again, like, I don't even think that that's what it is anymore. I want it to be that. I want very, very much for it to be that, because since I was little, I've always wanted to move to New York City. And I've told people, or used to tell people all the time, like, that's where I was going to move. And now I feel like if I was moving to New York City, I would need to have a really good reason. Like, not like I'm moving to work in an art gallery. Like, I'm moving to work in the Guggenheim. Or, like, I'm moving to work for you know, this American life or something. Yeah. Because otherwise, I'd just be embarrassed. I'd be embarrassed to tell people I'm moving to New York City because I would just expect an eye roll. I'd expect an eye roll and
like
a,
you think
oh.
it's contrived now.
Yeah, it's yeah, kinda, it's New York just is like, kind of played out.
Yeah,
and
like,
yet people still go.
Why would you move there? Like, you could move anywhere. You could move anywhere for half the cost. You could move to London. You could move to India. You could move anywhere for half the cost and have the experience that you want, which is to work really hard just to get by.
It's, when I was maybe a junior in college, I read this American, I had this American Lit class and we read The Great Gatsby. And my teacher, I remember he was making this argument that we're kind of talking about now, which is it's the Midwestern's idea of the American dream, you know? And so Gatsby has to go out and go seek this glitzy lifestyle. And then he gets out there and he has success. But what is that for him? It's empty, you know? And
yeah.
It's he has everything. I think he's from here, right? So he like has everything in the Midwest, and he has like land and a farm, and his family was from here. But then he goes to New York to die, essentially and literally. You know, it's like this.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry, I figured that everyone has read The Great Gatsby
or seen the movie.
Yeah,
the Leonardo DiCaprio.
Movie.
Hey.
Yes,
yes.
No, it and on the other side of the. Exactly, the Gatsby side, where not necessarily you go to New York to die, but you move to New York for a few years and you realize that what you were looking for was really elsewhere. But along the way, I've known people who have moved back from New York. I was actually at a wedding a couple weeks ago. I was talking to people who are from the Midwest and now live in New York and are doing very well, but are ready to not do so well. And are thinking of moving back to Minneapolis or Seattle, which is it's you know an expensive city in its own right, but New York it takes a special kind of person to stay in New York your whole life, and those are the kind of people you see represented in the media as you know, or in a documentary or a story or anything.
The
person who came to New York and stayed forever,
yeah.
And people think that that is you know that's for everybody, and it's really
it's not. Yeah, I have a friend who lives in New York who won't be friends with somebody in New York until they've lived there for over 5 years.
Oh,
because they're just gonna leave. Oh. I don't know if it's mean or not.
I don't know. That seems
because he's right. Well, he's just had think of all how many friends he's had. Who have been really good friends, you know, after like 6 months, like they form this really tight bond and they move.
Yeah, but then it's like a good excuse to go travel across the country and see that friend that you had, you know?
Yeah, but if it happens every 6 months.
Yeah, to each their own, I suppose. But I have a group of friends out there, like I have different friends and different groups out there. And it was funny because by the end of it, about half were like, Tess. Don't come here. Don't like, please come visit me twice a year, but please do not
don't move
here. Like for your sake. Like, he's like on it. Like one of my friends specifically, he was like, we were walking down the street on the Lower East Side, bar hopping, and it was drizzling a little bit, and it's around 2 a.m, so people are falling out into the streets, and he just looks at me and he's like, Tess, don't do it. He's like, stay where you are, stay where you are. But then you know, I had other. Friends, there's like a group of ladies who are like, you have to do it, you have to come out, you have to be my roommate, and you have to pay $2,000 a month.
See,
for
there's,
rent.
There's, yeah. there's that word should once again. have to is even ruder than should.
Yeah.
Not to knock
well
on your
they're
friends,
not being
but.
Rude it's just you know people see it in such a different way, and granted all those ladies are from New York, so I think that you know people who are from New York have a different mindset than those who have been transplanted there,
right?
But you know, it's romantic and it's gritty. But I think for Midwesterners, we have this idea of it that it's going to be this fantastical, rough thing. But just going for a week, like, our lives are so good here. Like, I was so happy
unreal.
To get off the plane yesterday and be back in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And I had this thought, I was like, maybe I've been giving Minneapolis a hard time. Mm-hmm. This is my home.
Sometimes you have to leave to realize how good you truly have it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go to New York, all the more power to you. I will say that.
Thank you.
But New York is, for me, it's just the city of FOMO, you know? It's the city that lives in Instagram and in you know, status updates from someone who, I have a friend who's a reporter at Bloomberg News. You know, he's got like a real journalism career, and I kind of have my like half-formed marketing / journalism, whatever. And it's always such a terrible case of FOMO. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't think I want that. I'm perfectly content where I am. In fact, there are too many people in Minneapolis.
Oh,
take it to Des Moines, people.
Get out now.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Minneapolis to become New York City. I think that that's another reason that I would stay here, is just to watch it happen.
That's the other thing, is that there's just so many good cities now. You know, before it was just New York, and then it was just New York and LA a little bit, and then it's like, Austin, Portland, Seattle, like all these really awesome cities are popping up. Minneapolis, you know, consistently being on the list of up and coming cities, and it's just like, what else?
It's
like,
growing.
What else do we need?
Yeah. yep.
Maybe better weather.
I don't know, man. I don't think so.
I know. You are the weirdest ever, though, because you like the horrible winters. So.
It's good for keeping people who shouldn't be here out.
Exactly. No, it is. It is. The only people who move here think it's worth it because they make it through the winter, because it is worth it, and they know that it's worth
it. You can say the same thing about the people moving to New York, that they think it's worth it to deal with the...
I think you're wrong.
I literally have never felt more alive than I have since surviving last winter. I will say that. My life, I'm not even joking right now, my life has become so much richer as a result of surviving that winter. I appreciate so much more. The colors are more vivid, everything. I'm perfectly happy in Minneapolis.
Me too.
Me three.